I'll start with a brief introduction for Mr. Pashupathi Gopalan. He is a thought leader and a visionary in energy and sustainability. He is currently focused on building out a portfolio of companies in the distributed energy and affordable housing space. He is the co-chairman and CEO of Sun Edison. He is also co-founder and CEO of Villasani Housing, an innovative platform to transform low-cost housing development for blue-collar workers. He is also an advisor to Omium, which is focused on green hydrogen production using PEM technology in India. Previously, Pashu was the president and CEO of Sun Edison for Asia, Africa, and Australia. He built Sun Edison's renewable energy business in these regions, including 1 gigawatt of renewable energy plants in India, Thailand, Malaysia, South Africa, China, and Japan. Pashu has also led Light Source, BP, and Everstone's bid to win the process of Green Growth Equity Fund, now called Eversource, run by National Infrastructure and Investment Fund of India and Department of International Development of UK Government in 2017. It's a pleasure to have you on board, sir, for this. The way in which we'll go is I'll request you to start with a presentation, post which we can have a question and answer session. Sir, over to you.
Thank you very much, Ritesh.
So Omium is a company where I'm an investor and a director. Basically, the company was founded by colleagues of mine, friends of mine who worked with me in NASA close to 16, 17 years back in the U.S. My colleagues who founded Omium, Arnie Ballantyne and Chalk, they've both worked for nearly 3 decades in hydrogen electrolysis and fuel cells, and they've been amongst the pioneers in the world in electrolyzer technology. They work across all different segments. So a lot of perspective I've learned about electrolyzer really comes from them. So I'm not a principal researcher or a technologist in this area, but nevertheless I've taken a lot of interest in the and we've been in just thinking on green hydrogen over the last, I would say, 13, 14 months when we started. So I'll walk you through some of our thinking and then also some information about Omium, which we should find interesting. So what I would also say about Omium is, from my own solar energy experience, which I started in India in 2009, what we realized is India can be leader. India should not be thinking like we will follow somebody else to bring the technology, we will license it. Our thinking in Omium has been from day one, why can't India lead why can't we Google in for creative primarily.
I'm not able to hear the face key correctly, but there seems to be we lose out on the sound sometimes.
Sir, it's perfectly fine. If you can switch off your video, I think it will help on the bandwidth, if it's fine. Your voice is breaking a bit.
Yeah, I did check my signal screen. I have very good Wi-Fi, but I'll still switch off my video. Maybe this will help.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. So when we think about India and when we think about major shifts in technology that affect the society, and we believe that hydrogen is going to be one such shift, what is important is it can't just be a point solution for it to become big and proliferate all walks of life and the society in a big way. You know, economic growth is very, very important. We have to achieve energy independence. We don't want to be in a situation like solar where after 10 years, even now, given a chance, we would be importing significantly. While the last few years have supported domestic content, but the domestic content is significantly uncompetitive compared to where China's industry is in solar, because China's capacity is probably 200 times that of India for 150 feet at a time, something like that, right? So it's massive. So we don't want to be in yet another situation with hydrogen and lost the boat on energy independence. Needless to say, I think climate change is very important. India is the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases. Obviously, I think we sometimes get away by counting per capita, but which is also quite relevant. But we also cannot forget that India is the third largest contributor to mankind's impact from greenhouse gases, and all of us have to do our part in reducing that. And then the last bit is, India does have a significant amount of fossil infrastructure already. There is somewhere between 70,000 and 80,000 gas stations pumping diesel and petroleum, and all of this cannot be abandoned in a decade. They all have to be preserved. So we, you know, we keep thinking about these dimensions being important as we transition to hybrid, right? Needless, I mean, I just made the point that India is the third largest emitter. This is just data supporting that. We're doing about 3 gigatons, while China is about 10 gigatons a year, three and a half times of where we are. You know, when we think about the energy transition, all of us are quite familiar with solar and wind, and wind probably has about a 20-year history in India, and solar has a 10-year history, you know, give or take one or two more years, and it's grown quite rapidly. Other than Suzlon and wind, predominantly all the equipment has really has come from elsewhere. The wind industry did a good job. I think Vestas and others probably set up factories, but solar has been primarily through imports. What we also want to make people aware is the three other important technologies. Battery technologies are important, which again is dominated by China. If you look at the cell, people think about battery manufacturing in India, but what is happening is only the cell manufacturing, which is the crux of the battery, is all done mostly in China. Similarly, in solar as well. Till date, what's been done is some amount of cell manufacturing and module manufacturing, but the bulk of polysilicon is all done primarily out of China. You know, we've been a polysilicon company. We were the first one to commercialize silicon in 1957 as such. So we are aware of this supply chain, and we want to make sure that we don't fall behind in hydrogen and lead in hydrogen. The one element which is often forgotten is it's very important to support and grow power electronics companies and infrastructure and manufacturing in India. Because across all of these technologies, the one technology which is a horizontal that cuts across and is important for every single energy transition technology is power electronics. And there again, we have investments to revolutionize this segment. You know, some of you that are from power electronics will understand that a lot of power electronics is built on silicon, and we have an investment in vertical bulk lithium niobate, which can carry a lot more current and will be much smaller, and will make the cost of power electronics significantly lower compared to where it is today. And the New York government has given us close to $100 million to set up a plant in New York. Devices across the board, I think for the country to transition and reduce climate change, all of these pillars have to be advanced significantly. Since the topic is on hydrogen, we'll talk about it here. We believe that if we start early and rapidly ramp up, we can achieve energy independence on the back of growing green hydrogen, and can also decarbonize other segments of energy. You know, because electricity represents only 25-30% of our energy usage. There is a significant amount of fossil. Obviously, transportation is nearly entirely dependent on fossil, but also the industrial requirements are primarily met by coal. So to decarbonize all of those sectors, you know, whether it is carbon used in steel or other sectors like cement, I think we will have to see how to use hydrogen. There is a lot of work being done on using hydrogen to reduce the iron ore or in iron making instead of carbon. And we are starting to see many projects being discussed and conceptualized as we speak in green steel, and we hope that India will not fall behind and will do the same. The bit about asset preservation is
No, I think.
I can hear you very well. I can hear you extremely well, which means the signal is good, so I don't know. Maybe I...
Sir, it's funny. I think we lost you for last 15 seconds.
A lot louder. Is this better? I can speak a lot louder.
Yep.
No, this is fine. I don't think it's sound. Are you using headphones or Bluetooth or anything?
I'm not.
Okay. Right now we are fine, sir.
My Wi-Fi is good and it's a very good laptop. So maybe I move my head as I speak, but probably passing in and out. I will fix my head not to move and also be a lot louder. And I'll be a few more inches closer to the microphone.
That's fine, sir. That's fine. Thank
you. All right. So this is a busy chart to basically show that the world has woken up and recognized. So honestly, if you think about it, some of you may ask the question, why green hydrogen now? You know, green hydrogen, first of all, making hydrogen by electrolysis is not new at all. I think it's been used for more than 6 decades. The U.S. submarines started using hydrogen electrolyzers to make both hydrogen and oxygen more than 60 years back. In space programs, like in the Gemini program, nearly 20, 25 years back, PEM, proton exchange membrane electrolyzers, were developed by GE. So the electrolysis or electrolyzer technology has been around for a very long time. It is the economics of renewable energy which is making the possibility of green hydrogen happen right now, where it's starting to look like it can be a real, you know, real reality for all of us. Otherwise, you know, I think George Bush Jr., when he took oath as president, basically said that a child born today will drive a hydrogen car. Although that may not have entirely happened, but Toyota and Hyundai and others do have hydrogen cars in certain markets, and it is becoming a reality. So I think I'll leave you with a couple things. You know, we've done all kinds of modeling. We are very confident that hydrogen can be produced at approximately $1.50 a kilogram by 2025. And around $1 a kilogram by 2030. We have the assumptions written down, but many others have also said the same thing. This chart of ours is nearly 1 year old, but some of the other Indian famous leaders have pointed to these numbers more recently, and we've been sharing this chart with the various government departments for nearly 13, 14 months, as I mentioned. The other bit to note down is hydrogen can be competitive compared to diesel and petroleum, and this is not even counting the additional duties and taxes. So here, I think in these calculations, we have taken diesel to be about 40 rupees a liter, not accounting for all the taxes. Even then, we think hydrogen will be competitive. So we are, you know, we are urging the automotive OEM and the gas station infrastructure companies like Indian Oil Corporation, BPCL, HPCL, to rise up to the challenge, and for the OEMs to roll out their vehicles, and for the gas station companies to start setting up gas stations for hydrogen.
Sir, I think
we took the decision based on our experience of doing solar in India, that India can lead and does not have to lag or import technology from anywhere. So, you know, we're very happy to say that we have a factory that's been certified by TUV to have the gigafactory status, and we are starting to ship equipment, and coincidentally our first shipments have all been exports out of India. So not only do we want to use this to get to energy independence, but make it a hub where it can also contribute to economic development of the country. And that's our wish, because energy, as we all will know, in the last couple of hundred years has played a significant role in the economic development of various countries, whether it is UK because of coal and...
Sir, if you can go through the prior slide, I think, wherein you had the cost numbers prior to this. Yeah, this was a very interesting slide. We lost a part of your commentary over here.
So the point I was making is there are a lot of assumptions that go into estimating the cost of hydrogen, because there is a renewable energy cost. In renewable energy, we are aware, you know, we have also played a role in requesting for these changes, but we're also aware of these things happening, which is there will be dollar-denominated tariffs for hydrogen projects. There will be nearly zero transmission cost or competitive transmission cost. Also, the government is thinking about doing banking of renewable power to allow for higher utilization of the electrolyzer plants. And there is also a PLI scheme for electrolyzers. So the government is going on a war footing to support hydrogen. So it's honestly hard to say exactly where we will end up. But when you do the mathematics, it seems like the production cost of hydrogen can be in the range of $1.50 by 2025. And that is starting to become competitive with hydrogen produced from natural gas. And you may also be aware that the government is coming up with mandates for the gas companies like GAIL and Mahanagar Gas and other gas companies to blend some percentage of their natural gas with hydrogen. And the numbers that have been talked about are somewhere in the range of 3, 4, 5% or 6%, something like that. And also the refineries use a lot of hydrogen. They will also have a blending target, and so will the fertilizer companies. So uniquely, I think India might emerge as one of the most interesting hydrogen markets, thanks to the visionary proposal that the government is currently considering. So the other bit is, I think we already mentioned the work the government is doing, but we also are requesting companies like Toyota and Hyundai to believe and take note of this rapid development of hydrogen in India, which can make it a very interesting market for them to roll out their vehicles. Because I think our whole philosophy has been that all the numbers that have been projected about hydrogen for 2050, we want to bring it down, accelerate that to 2025. Because if you think about the cost of hydrogen, it's the cost of renewable energy, cost of electrolyzer, and utilization of electrolyzer. Utilization of electrolyzer is somewhat of a policy matter. So if based on our roadmap, we understand the electrolyzer cost, and the renewable cost is quite widely known already. So if you add these three, you can very easily get to these numbers. And we are urging companies that are OEMs to set up their manufacturing operations in India and make sure that the vehicles can be rolled out in India. And then India can even serve as an export market if it grows ahead of the other markets in deploying hydrogen vehicles. Talking about targets, we are requesting that India take a target of, India already, I don't know if some of you may know this already, but India already uses about 6 million metric tons of hydrogen per year, most of which is produced by steam methane reforming of natural gas. And so these numbers are not completely an outlier. I think based on the ground-up planning that we have done, we think we can achieve these numbers of getting to 5 million metric tons of green hydrogen by 2025 and 20 million metric tons by 2030. We believe these will serve as visionary but yet achievable targets which can make India the hub for hydrogen. I think I've talked about some of these things, so maybe I'm not going to repeat myself, from a dollar-denominated tariff to incentives for manufacturing in India and then concessional transmission. The immediate implementation will happen in certain industries that are already using gray hydrogen, which we talked about it already. Refineries and fertilizer plants are the largest user of hydrogen. And then the gas companies can blend hydrogen, and there's a lot of work that's already been done proactively by them to blend hydrogen and demonstrate that it is quite possible to do it, below a certain percentage, which is what they all are going to attempt to do. The point about visionary targets and bringing other companies, we believe that if we take the lead and send a signal to the the largest companies in the world that are OEMs and are doing different parts of their value chain, we believe that they all will come to India and set up their manufacturing and make India